There were two things I wanted to talk to you about today. First, why don't we start with the fact that today is Veterans Day, and you are a veteran.
I am.
You also serve on the Armed Forces Committee, right?
Yes, I do. So I spent most of my adult life in the United States Navy after graduating from the Naval Academy, and my father before me spent all of his adult life rising from an enlisted rank to eventually command a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier airborne battle wing. So I think between the two of us, we have almost 70 years of time in the Navy.
Wow. So I know you spent the day going around to different facilities and visiting with... tell me what you did today.
So I started off at a memorial ceremony at an American Legion where we dedicated a monument to a recently deceased Command Sergeant Major. And then I have gone throughout the small towns of my district, stopping at the Veterans of Foreign Wars Halls and the American Legions, just to walk in and shake a few hands and say thank you very much for your service to our country.
And I'm sure they appreciate that.
It's interesting. I get a lot of interesting responses. Some people say, I'm really surprised you're taking time to drive out to these very, very small towns and villages. Other people who know me well offer me a cold beer. So it's good reconnecting with friends.
I have to ask, because yesterday was the memorial service for the 13 men and women killed at Fort Hood. Do you think what happened there is perhaps a sign of a bigger problem? What is your take on the tragic events?
Well, this is certainly a tragedy of national proportions. Even as the United States Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps do their best to be as inclusive as possible, this will inevitably have ramifications, and I suspect the United States Army and the entire Department of Defense are in a full review of interior plans and policies. And I caution everyone that this is a time to allow the Army and the DOD to run their investigation and inform the American people of what happened. Until then, I think it's a lot of speculation, and that speculation can be very counterproductive in anticipation of waiting for the facts.
I'm so glad you said that, because as the events of that day were unfolding and I'm watching the news coverage, it was all speculation, and it continues to be. I mean, even on the part of Joe Lieberman, who's, I think, said some very inflammatory things in saying that he's going to hold hearings, but it seems like he's going into these hearings with a preconceived notion of what Major Hassan was all about.
Well, we certainly have seen a lot of things in the press, but these things are reported piecemeal. And going back to my military training, I know that if I was on active duty today, I would want the United States Congress to sit down and receive information that was developed by the active duty experts. And so I'm mentioning to my colleagues and to my constituents that we will know soon enough what it is that went wrong and what must happen to ensure that it does not occur again. But I think that speculation and inflammatory comments on my part as a member of Congress will only do harm. They will not do good.
Well, I agree with you, and I'm glad you're being responsible in that sense. Now, again, I mentioned you sit on the Armed Services Committee. We are awaiting word from the president on what future action he's going to take in Afghanistan. And on Veterans Day, this is a good day to sit back and wonder what our long-term strategy is there, whether or not we should be there. I have very definitive opinions. I think we need to get the hell out of there. But this is not about me. It's about you. What are your thoughts on Afghanistan?
Last week, I went to the floor of the House of Representatives and stated that after 2,957 days, $300 billion known to have been spent, more like $600 billion, and tragically, the loss of hundreds and the wounding of thousands, it is time to come home. And I understand that people will say, well, what if terrorist organizations arise again? And my answer to that is very clear. We entered Afghanistan 8 years ago with a force of 1,000 commandos to identify, locate, capture, or kill those who have done us harm or who would do us harm. And I reserve that right anywhere in the world. That does not mean that we become an occupying military power that becomes an organization that builds infrastructure and spends $100 million a day constructing schools, waterworks, and roads. This, by the way, urged by some of the same people who argue vehemently and show up at rallies saying the American government should not be building schools, roads, and water systems in our own country. So my answer is, without a mission that is clearly defined and protecting elections and creating a Afghan national identity in the face of one of the most corrupt central governments that we've ever been associated with, that is not a mission. Certainly it's not a military mission. We have been militarily victorious. It is time to come home.
I agree. Unfortunately, with the latest reports from today say that the president is weighing four options. None of those four seem to be bringing our men and women home. It seems to be how many troops he's going to send, from a minimum of what looks to be about 13,000 all the way up to the 40,000 that General McChrystal requested. But on the other side, it looks like he is also a bit, weighing what our future mission there should be. What is your role? What is the Armed Services Committee's role? Do you get to advise on a strategy or the law? What kind of influence can you have on this process?
No, the House of Representatives defers to the Commander-in-Chief. The Commander-in-Chief is, in fact, the commander of U.S. military. The House of Representatives' role is to consider requests for funding. The Constitution is very clear about this. The Senate advises and consents on matters of foreign policy. There is no doubt that there will be a debate in the House of Representatives on this issue. And there's also no doubt that you will hear people say things like, we must complete the mission, we must be victorious. But to them I ask the question, what does victory mean? And what is the mission? And since I can get no one to clearly answer that question for me, then from a purely professional military point of view, I cannot support the president in his decision to send some number of incremental troops greater than there are there today and maintain them there indefinitely. So whether it's George Bush in Iraq or President Barack Obama in Afghanistan, I respectfully disagree.
Congressman Eric Massa, I appreciate those words on this Veterans Day. Now I want to move on to the other subject, which is healthcare reform. You cast a very controversial, but I believe important vote on Saturday in the House of Representatives on H.R. 3962. You and 38 other Democrats voted against the legislation. But I say that two of you, you and Dennis Kucinich, voted against it for the right reasons. Can you explain to us why you voted against it?
When all is said and done, this legislation will try to achieve universal health care coverage by creating in law the requirement that you buy a policy from a private for-profit health insurance corporation. I believe the private for-profit health insurance industry is at the core of the problem that we face in this nation, and therefore I do not believe they can be at the center of the solution. Now, I understand that some have said, well, we have to get whatever we can get and make it better from there. And if, in fact, I thought this bill moved us closer to a solution, I might agree. But this bill, I believe in my heart and soul, codifies into law the things that I think are wrong with our health care system, not the things that can be made better. And it was a very difficult vote for me to take. But I believe that if you pass a law that cuts Medicare, that lays an increased unfunded mandate at the foot of the states, all for the purpose of enshrining in perpetuity the monopolistic power of the for-profit private health industry, that you're going in the wrong direction. This American healthcare should not be based on a for-profit industry. The two things are completely incongruous. You cannot supply good healthcare and at the same time supply and have as the paramount goal profit sharing with your stockholders. The two things don't work. We are the only country in the world that is attempting to do this, and we're attempting to do it because the private for-profit health insurance industry has a stranglehold on the decision-making process of our legislators. Not to mention the fact this bill, I was asked to sign a letter that said I would not vote for legislation unless it had a robust public option. Robust being defined as access to the public option for all Americans, and that it would be tied to Medicare rates to have the inherent savings associated with a not-for-profit system. This bill does not even have a decent public option. 2% of the American people at best will be able to access it, and the rates will be the same for the public option as it is for the private for-profit health insurance option. I signed a letter saying I would not do that. When I put my name on a piece of paper, I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. And if you're not willing to do that when you sign a letter, then I would counsel you shouldn't put your name on it.
Yes.
And for all those reasons, I voted no.
Well, and good for you, because I watched, you know, I followed it very closely when you and I think it was 61 of your colleagues in the Progressive Caucus signed that letter. But unfortunately, all but you and Congressman Kucinich caved in on that. I spoke with Congressman Raul Grijalva yesterday, and I understand why he voted for it. His reasoning was that, look, we need to move this bill forward, but I still have a lot of problems with it. But I wanted to keep it alive, and hopefully we can improve on it before we come to a final vote. But he also said that, you know, if the bill stands as it is, you know, as it was as a final version, he would have to vote against it.
So to that I need to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
If the bill returns from the Senate as it is written today, and you say you have to vote against it, then why did you vote for it to send it to the Senate? That's my argument. And people say, well, then you got to get something. And my answer is, there's about 10 things we can get immediately. We can get interstate portability. We can get expansion of Medicare benefits at both ends of the age spectrum. We can increase the ability for children to stay on their parents' group rates when they get out of school through age 29.
Mm-hmm.
We can close the donut hole on Medicare Part D. We can require prescription drug companies to compete for federal contracts. These are all things that have vast positive impact and great political support. But I do not believe it is my job to go to the United States Congress, say one thing and do another, and as long as my name means something on a piece of paper, I won't.
Well, good for you. I appreciate that. Now, what would it take for you to vote for the final legislation? I spoke also with Congressman Kucinich last night, and, you know, I've had him on this program many, many times, and, you know, he and John Conyers wrote the single-payer bill, H.R. 676, and he had the Kucinich amendment pass in his committee, which would have left the door open for states to enact their own single-payer program. He said that would have been enough for him. If something like that, if there were language in there allowing states to enact a single-payer system, that would provide enough of an opening for competition, for some real change to take place. What would it take for you to have to be able to vote for health care legislation?
Well, I would have to agree that the idea of having a state opt into a single-payer system is very exciting. And, in fact, I would tell my extreme conservative friends who are all wrapped up in states' rights, why would you want to deny a state the opportunity to exercise their own autonomy? So I would be very excited about that and very, very supportive. I don't know what the Senate's going to do. Frankly, it's very, very hard to predict what that body will endeavor to accomplish. But I have never seen them improve upon a piece of legislation we've sent them.
Mm.
So I don't know where we're going to head. But I am prepared to fight for legislation, even if it is individual issues that will expand coverage for Americans as much as we can all make happen, because I'm not willing to sit back and say my way or the highway, but neither am I willing to take a bold step in the wrong direction, and I don't support this legislation.
Congressman Eric Massa, you're a freshman congressman. This is your first term. What kind of feedback are you getting from your constituents? I know you're in a pretty conservative district in New York.
My constituents are highly supportive of my position for numerous reasons. The bottom line is, the night of the vote, I kind of felt like I was getting kicked around the House chamber like a soccer ball. But I don't work for my colleagues in Washington, D.C. I was sent to Washington, above all, to take an oath to do no harm and to only take votes that will actually help the people back home and what I believe to be the people nationwide. By the way, there's great popularity for this bill. largely because people don't understand exactly what it is.
Right.
They think that somehow this embodies their beliefs, and when you tell them, well, do you realize that the SUPAC amendment is in it that fundamentally destroys Roe v. Wade?
Yep.
You understand there is no public option. Are you aware of the fact that this makes it unlawful unless you actually support a private for-profit industry? And at that point, people go, well, that's not what I want. And my answer is, well, that's what's in this bill. So in virtually all the audiences I've been speaking to, all the phone calls I've fielded, even in my supporters who ardently want something to happen, they understand at the end of the day, you can't settle for anything. You have to move in the right direction.
Now, what about those who say, if we don't get something passed this year, we're basically screwed. It's not going to happen. It's going to be a repeat of the Clintons in 93, 94.
Well, I disagree with that because I'm very willing to champion the issues that I just gave a laundry list of, all of which will vastly help all Americans obtain better health care. So maybe we should be willing to understand that sometimes comprehensive 2,000-page pieces of legislation that, frankly, very few people can understand without the help of an entire table full of attorneys may not be the way to go. And if we can't get this passed, if this fails, and I don't know what's going to happen in the United States Senate, maybe we ought to try to get smaller bites of the apple accomplished to help as many people as we can.
I like that. Congressman Eric Massa, thank you for weighing in with us on this and on this Veterans Day, and thank you for your service to the country and for all you do. You got a lot of people out here supporting you. I'm a big fan of yours, and I was happy to see you stand up. You know, again, you and Dennis Kucinich were the only two who held true to that letter you signed, and I'm glad you did.
Well, thank you very much. Until you have a chance to talk again, good health to you, and God bless.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.